#1 sports site in the world.
Live from the Click and Loan studios of the Yahoo Sports Radio headquarters. Nighttime is the right time.
You're on the nighttime now.
It's Tony D on Yahoo Sports Radio.
Will the Bucks win in overtime at Atlanta? Ryan in the shotgun takes the snap. We try to get to him. He is going to be hit. He gets the pass away, and it's incomplete. Buccaneers win. Barring a flag, there are no flags. And the Tampa Bay Buccaneers come to Atlanta and beat Matt Ryan and the Atlanta Falcons in overtime.
Fourth down. Here's the shotgun snap. Castle pumps. He throws a long look deep down the far right side in quadruple coverage. The Seahawks leap against the sailing football. Knocked down. And the Seahawks turn Dallas over on downs. Seattle holds on by a point, 13-12.
Carr in the gun. Carr going to drop back. Jones right flat. No one to block. One-on-one with DeMario Davis. Runs right by him. Still going. He's gone. What a run by Tywan Jones. Give it to me again. Touchdown! Raiders!
Manning turns, gives to Anderson. A hole on the left side. He pops into the secondary at the 10. Anderson at the 5. And into the end zone for the touchdown. 28-yard burst right up the middle by C.J. Anderson.
Tony D with you.
This is Tony D working the third shift.
From the Click and Loan Studios, here's
Tony D.
Tony D.
WDAE in Tampa, Gene Deckerhoff, the voice of the Buccaneers with that final call as the Bucs beat the Atlanta Falcons at the Georgia Dome. That avenged a bad loss in Week 3 last year, where the Falcons put like 56 on the board. Anyway, Jameis Winston and the Bucs got their third win of the season. Falcons dropped to 6-2. Cairo in Seattle, the Seahawks beat the Dallas Cowboys in Dallas, and the Cowboys manage only four field goals in a 13-12 loss to the Seahawks, their fifth straight. Oakland, Greg Papo with a call on KGMZ in Oakland as they beat the New York Jets. They rolled past the New York Jets to pick up their third win of the season. KOA in Denver as the Broncos beat the Green Bay Packers. That C.J. Anderson touchdown run as we go to Week 8 in the National Football League. We've been talking about the Broncos. We better get off them because there were some other great performances in Week 8. But if you want to talk about them and the resurgence of their offense, feel free to do so. 800-777-2907. I know a number of you have called this show that are Dallas Cowboy fans. I railed against the Cowboys in the first hour tonight saying, listen, I just don't get it. There really isn't anybody out there that can come in and win you a football game at the quarterback position. The only people that you can bring in to play quarterback for the Dallas Cowboys are bums that cannot throw the ball downfield and score and move the chains at all, or move the team at all and put the team in the end zone. I'm sorry. I don't know what to make of this. Look, Matt Castle, I'm sure, is a fine human being, but not to try to end a losing skid for the Dallas Cowboys. And stop selling these guys, Jerry Jones, as people who can, because they can't. And they've lost five straight, and now they're 2-5. And look, time isn't ticking right now, but it is going to be eventually if you don't start winning football games. Look, there's still plenty of time. There's still plenty of games. But don't wake up one day, Dallas, and be three games out with five to play. You're not going to go to the playoffs. And the situation is perfect for you to go to the playoffs and be formidable. If you get Tony Romo back and he's healthy, and he doesn't have the wear and tear of a season on his belt, and he clicks with Dez Bryant, and things look like they're turning around, who'd want to face Dallas? Who'd want to face Dallas? But you got to get to the playoffs to exploit that. And you can't get to the playoffs if guys that are replacing him can't close out and win games. When you have leads, keep the leads. When you need to go down the field, go down the field. I mean, I know I'm making it more simple than it sounds, but I just cannot believe the bad luck that team has had during this five-game losing skid, blowing three 14-point leads against the Atlanta Falcons. Blowing games in New Orleans, blowing a game against the Giants, blowing this one. Come on. And it all stems from the inability of the quarterback to continue drives, make plays, get first downs, not throw for 97 yards. 97 yards. Well, Seattle's defense is tough. I'm not expecting you to throw for 400. But man, oh man alive, this thing is going to slip away from you. The Jets. What do we do with the Jets? 4-3 now. I said three wins. I actually meant four. Ha ha. Give him an extra one. Here's Derek Carr now with four touchdown passes against a defense at the beginning of the season. Put them in my top five. And the Jets are reeling a bit. Ryan Fitzpatrick is hurt. Geno Smith came in. Threw two touchdowns, but also a pick.
And got hurt.
Cincinnati didn't look good against Pittsburgh. Didn't need to look good. They are 7-0 now as they beat the Steelers on the road 16-10. Ben Roethlisberger is back, but they lost Le'Veon Bell. What a gruesome injury that was.
Ugh.
Oh, my God. By the way, I'm starting to really hate this league, by the way.
Yeah.
Starting to get on my nerves. This NFL. I'm going to end up ejecting as a fan in a couple of years.
Not only are we seeing all these injuries, we're having to watch all these injuries while watching bad football.
Right. Exactly. Golly, this league. You know what it is? It's like a drug now. It's like, you know what I mean? It's like a drug. You know it's bad for, like, nobody ever goes, man, crack is the greatest thing that ever happened to me. It's awesome. It makes me do this. It makes me do this. It makes my day better. It's just fantastic. Oh, snorting coke. I can't begin to tell you how awesome it is. It's like smoking. My brother smokes, right? And everybody I know who smokes is like, look, this is a terrible habit. I hate it. But I got into it. I got hooked and I can't stop. You know, nobody ever goes, oh, my God, cigarettes. My life has never been better since I started smoking. I mean, everything about me is better. My health is better. I breathe better. My clothes smell better. My breath smells better. My teeth look sharp. All because of smoking. If it wasn't for smoking, I'd be a wreck. Everyone goes, look, I'm addicted. I wish I could stop. I can't stop. It's terrible for me. I get it. This league pulls at my emotions more than any other sport, and it always breaks my heart. The Steelers just get their quarterback back. I feel like, all right, cool. Now I get this offense rolling again, and Le'Veon Bell's hurt. I mean, how many injuries can I put up with? I know, Dallas, you're feeling the same way. Like, boom, Dez Bryant and Tony Romo, gone. It's like, you know, you get all excited, and it's only because we wait so long for this, right? It's not like any other. Look, what is it? One game in the NFL, like 16 games, one game in the NFL is the equivalent to 10 games in baseball. So when you lose a guy for 5 weeks, it's like losing a baseball player for 50 games. You really feel it. You know it. And it's so hard because going into this season, the Steelers offense, just, you know, as a fan now, not as impartial talk show host, but as a fan, I go into the season going, you know, last year, the Steelers offense was rolling and Bell got hurt and it kind of slowed down in the playoffs. But that playoff loss to the Ravens, it's not like they got blown out. Remember that was the game that Roethlisberger got hurt and then came back. So now you lose, you know, you get him back and then Le'Veon Bell's hurt again. It breaks your heart, man. This league just tears you to pieces with these injuries. Billy Ray in Texas wants to talk Yahoo Sports Radio. What's going on, my friend?
All not much. How you doing tonight?
Not bad. What's on your mind?
The Cowboys and our problems we have here at quarterback. I was really just had a quick question for you. See what you thought about maybe going out and trying to get Tim Tebow to come over.
Ooh! Did we have I wish we had a special prize we could give you, man, because in fact, I've always been wondering when the Tebow to whoever is going to, you know, it didn't matter which team. I don't know. I think with Tebow's struggles is, with all the joking about his career aside, Tebow's biggest struggles is he doesn't read defenses very well. And so I don't know if you want to bring in a guy and give him a crash course on that. I don't think he would be effective. But aren't there other players available that are at least equipped to move you down the field a little bit than Matt Cassel and Brandon Whedon? I mean, I can't imagine that there is just nobody out there that you can bring in that can do a better job than those two. I think
somebody needs to talk to maybe Jerry and his son and see if they won't let Jason go out and pick a quarterback. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure he was the backup to Troy Aikman back in the day.
Yeah, exactly.
And he did all right. So, I mean, he knows what he needs to get him through the next, you know, three or four games. get one or two wins and keep us in there.
Because nobody, like I said earlier, no one is running away with that division. And if you just stay afloat and Romo comes back healthy, then they become a really strong team. To get a healthy quarterback in December that doesn't have the wear and tear of the season, but is coming back fresh, rested and ready to go, recovered from the injury, that's a big plus down the stretch. That is a huge plus down the stretch. But you can't get there unless you have a guy. Again, he doesn't have to be a star. He doesn't have to put up great numbers. He doesn't have to be Joe Montana. But, man, he's got to look the part at least. And these two guys haven't looked the part at all. I mean, Matt Cassel plays the position like an outfielder goes to the mound in baseball. You know, like, oh, well, we need a guy. You know, can you pitch a little bit? Okay, I'll pitch. Maybe get you through a couple of outs. I mean, Cassel had some passes where he didn't even look like a quarterback in this league. And the problem is, I wish Jerry Jones would stop selling these guys. Stop selling these guys. Because it makes you look bad when people go, darn, they stink. Brandon Whedon, really? He sold Brandon Whedon like he was Johnny Unitas. And then 3 weeks later, we're bringing in Matt Cassel. I'd rather have late Ryan Mallett than Brandon Whedon. I mean, the Ryan Mallett that's missing flights than Brandon Whedon. Who else is out there? Who else is in need of a job? Are all the McCown brothers taken?
I believe so. Right?
Is there a Hasselbeck out there that's not quite done yet?
Just Tim and his fantasy football glory.
Oh, yeah, okay, yeah.
The four letter.
Yeah, you're not going to be able to. Elizabeth won't let him.
No.
Let him work anymore. You be talking on that television.
Right.
You ain't going back to play football, young man.
The name I heard, because supposedly, as soon as Fitzpatrick got hurt there and with the Jets, they started calling quarterbacks instantly, like during the game, is what
that's
everybody
best.
Was reporting. And the name that came up right away was Matt Flynn.
Fine, Matt Flynn. How about Jerry? You go get Matt Flynn.
Right.
Just go get him right now. Why not? What do you have to lose?
Yeah, what's he going to play worse?
I mean, really, what do you have to lose? Nothing. Oh, hell, if you want to give the ball to Tebow and have him do, at this point, I don't care. I saw Matt Cassel miss a wide open screen pass today. It made me want to puke. It's like, my God, this league. The league should look at college coaches and go, just, you know what? Stop the spread or these fancy offenses you're doing. Just be what you are, which is our farm system, and start raising these quarterbacks up to play right away. Thanks. Here, we'll supplement you. You don't win national championships, but you're breeding quarterbacks. Because, my God, they can't find anybody in this league that can play this position. I mean, think about it. There should be 60, 70 people that can play it somewhat decently. There's not 15 that can play this decently. All right, 800-777-2907 is the telephone number. It is Tony D. A lot, Week 8, World Series. A lot to get to. Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the third shift.
This guy's on. That too. Back to the Quick and Loan Studios. And back to Tony D.
All right, Tony D here on the nighttime on Yahoo Sports Radio. Hey, thanks for joining us. And again, we were talking about what a great sports weekend it was. It was also Halloween. By the way, my big candy bar thing went really, really well.
Oh, yeah. I meant to ask.
But I had leftovers because we had a rainy, crappy Halloween. So we didn't get as many kids as we wanted, or as many kids as we thought. So I ended up with, I had 60 pieces of candy, 60 bars, Skittles bags, Starburst, Hershey bars, all that stuff. I ended up with 17 left because we just did not get the kind of traffic I thought we were going to get.
My wife came home with like 5 bags of candy for all the trick-or-treaters. We had one. And it was like a 17-year-old girl.
Oh, really?
Yeah. What time was your trick-or-treating at there?
Well, I was kind of looking at it like it was like 5 o'clock when it kind of started, 5:30 with the little kids. And then it started to pick up, and it didn't probably end until a little bit after 9 with more teenagers.
Yeah, but I didn't see anything around my area until like 6:30.
You live in a good neighborhood?
Yeah.
All right, let's make sure, because, you know, be like, no, let's not go over there.
No.
That's a scary part of town.
No, like, once 6:30 hit, there was I saw a lot of little kids, like, walking around, because I live in, like, an apartment complex, but, and my door's kind of on the side. It's kind of in an awkward spot where you can't really see it, so I think that's why we didn't get any. Because you have to kind of walk around the side of all the garages and everything, and it's way out of the way. But, yeah, I got one, and like I said, it was a 17-year-old girl who was dressed all weird. I don't even know what she was.
So Halloween comes, my kids go out trick-or-treating, and then, of course, I enact the parent candy tax.
Yep.
Which is, let's go over this, and let's see what daddy likes. And I'm going to, you know, I like peanut M&Ms. I'm taking those and a bunch of others. So then I settled in to watch the World Series. Now, I know the Royals just won, but I do want to go back to game four for a second, because I thought this is where the series really changed. The fourth game is the most important game of a seven-game series, at least the way I look at it. A lot of people say it's game five or whatever. I don't. I look at game four, because it's game four is a series is either going to end, it's either going to be tied and becomes a best of three, or it's going to be 3-1, and that's a very, very hard mountain to climb. Game five, sure, you get the edge, you can win, you're up 3-2, whatever. I understand, but game four is where the fortunes can tell. We're going to look back on this World Series, and we're going to say a lot of things about the Royals, and rightly so, because as history goes, and you get teams, a lot of the nuances, the little small things kind of get lost in the larger framework. The Royals will be remembered as this really, really, really good hitting team that came in and got the job done a year after they didn't get it done. That'll end up being the historical story of the Royals. But a deeper look is you're going to remember the Mets. If you really look at remember this series, you're going to remember the Mets as making a series of really, really bad mistakes that cost them. The Alex Gordon home run in the bottom of the ninth inning at Kauffman Stadium that sent that game into extra innings. The Mets should have walked away with that win. Game three was fantastic. They ended up with that. They got a great outing from Noah Syndergaard, and they won that game. Game three, Michael Conforto hit two home runs. They go in and Daniel Murphy makes that blunder, that error that opened up the door for the Kansas City Royals. And then, I don't know if you saw this Saturday night, but Yoenis Cespedes with one of the worst base-running blunders I have ever seen on that kind of stage. One out line drive, and he's caught off first base by that much? Mike Moustakas must have been like, holy beep, that guy's way off first base, game over. And you'll look back and you'll remember that the Mets really hurt themselves a lot in this series, including what they did with Matt Harvey. Yahoo Sports Radio.
This is Tony D on Yahoo Sports Radio. And Yahoo Sports Radio.
This is Tony D.
Once again, from the Quicken Loans Studios, here's Tony D.
It's Tony D here on the Nighttime on Yahoo Sports Radio. As we've been going over games in the National Football League, the Pittsburgh Steelers fell to Cincinnati 16-10, but have lost Le'Veon Bell for the season. We bring in Ray Fittipaldo from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette to talk about the Steelers' season so far and this loss. Ray, how are you? Thank you so much for your time.
I'm good. Thanks for having me on tonight.
All right, can you give us the official diagnosis of what Le'Veon Bell is going through and his current situation?
Well, there are some reports out there that he is, in fact, done for the season. I know the NFL Network and ESPN have reported that. We at the Post-Gazette have not been able to confirm that his season is over, but at the very least, it looks like the Steelers are going to have to play for several weeks without him, if not for the rest of the season. And that means another dose of D'Angelo Williams, who actually filled in very well for Bell for the first two games of the season when Bell was serving a two-game suspension. So it's going to be an uphill climb for the Steelers to make the playoffs now without Bell. I thought they had a really good shot, even being 4-4 if he had been there. But you're minus your left tackle, you're minus your center, and now you're minus your all-pro running back. It's going to be a tough deal for the Steelers to make the playoffs now, I think.
Yeah, in terms of how the offense looks differently without him, you mentioned D'Angelo Williams, who filled in nicely. But overall, what does Bell do that really does make this offense work?
Well, I mean, not only is Le'Veon an all-pro running back, but he also serves as a very effective receiver out of the backfield. He actually, on the play he was injured, he actually caught an 8-yard pass from Roethlisberger on that play, and he's just a dynamic receiver. I mean, Ben Roethlisberger has said on many occasions that Le'Veon Bell can make an easy transition to be a very good wide receiver in this league. So I think they're going to miss him most in the passing game. That's when the Steelers were really dynamic last year when Le'Veon Bell was involved in the passing game. Teams were able to shut down Bell last year in the running game, but they were never able to shut him down completely. He always got his yards in the passing game, too, if teams were able to limit his yardage running-wise. Now, you know, D'Angelo Williams is a good back, but he's not a very effective receiver out of the backfield, and the Steelers are going to have to turn to their receivers more. They're going to have to get more out of Antonio Brown and Martavis Bryant than they did today. And they're going to have to lean on tight end Heath Miller just the way they did today. It's going to be a tough go for the Steelers, but they do still have some weapons left with Brown and Bryant on the outside there.
In terms of how this team looked, with a lot of anticipation of having Ben Roethlisberger back, before the Bell injury, how did they look against the Bengals, who lead that division?
Well, he looked great on the first drive. I mean, he marched right down the field. They were able to score on a 1-yard touchdown to Antonio Brown, and it looked like it was going to be a banner day for the offense. But the Bengals just did a great job from there on out. They held the Steelers to a field goal the rest of the way. They sort of bent, but they didn't break. And then, you know, I don't know how much of that was Cincinnati's defense, to be honest with you. It might have just been Ben throwing the three picks. I mean, two were really ill-advised. The one at the end of the game that set up the winning touchdown, I think with 5.5 minutes to go, should have thrown that ball out of bounds. He tried to extend the play, and the safety for the Bengals made a great diving interception near the sideline. And then on the last interception, just a complete overthrow, it seemed like he was a little bit bothered by the rush there, and he didn't set himself, and it was a bad throw. So, you know, overall, not a good day for Ben, but based on his history, I think a lot of people know he wasn't very good in his previous comeback games, and I think the Steelers are hoping that he'll get better and better as he gets to feel more comfortable with the way that knee is feeling the rest of the season.
Ray Fittipaldi joins us from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette on the Steelers who've lost Le'Veon Bell as they had Ben Roethlisberger return in a 16-10 loss to Cincinnati. Ray, I know you cover the Steelers, but I know you also look at the division, and when you see a team like Cincinnati now undefeated, in terms of how they look in terms of the other good NFL teams in the league, is this Cincinnati team look all that different than other good teams they've had in the past and just getting more wins, or is this a dramatically different team than years past?
Based on what I've seen today, and I've seen them on television a few times before today, but I didn't think they looked good today. Andy Dalton looked like he was the playoff Andy Dalton, to be quite honest with you. They probably deserved to lose that game the way they played on offense. But you have to give the defense some credit there, and you have to give some credit to Dalton and the offense for showing some fortitude and getting that touchdown to put them ahead there. But I do not put them on the Patriots level. And after what happened tonight with the Broncos, I would not put them on the Broncos level. I'd probably say they're the third best team in the AFC right now. They got a shot in the playoffs, but I would not be surprised at all if the Cincinnati Bengals were one and done in the playoffs again.
Ray, how has the Steelers' defense looked this year? I know a lot of talk about it being very young, but without Dick LeBeau overall, how has the Steelers' defense played?
I'm very surprised at how well they've sort of been able to put things together so quickly under Keith Butler. There's been a lot of input from Mike Tomlin and what they're doing this year. They really didn't show it today, but they've been a heavy blitzing team in the first seven games. They've decided to change up their coverage a little bit, the way they do things there, and the results have been very good. Yeah, they've had their ups and downs, and you know, the Patriots sort of had their way with them in the opener, but since then they've been really, really solid. And it's the complete opposite of what people thought was going to happen at the beginning of the season. Everyone thought the offense was going to carry this team, and the defense was going to have to just, you know, sort of play okay for the Steelers to get by, and now it's the defense that's playing lights out, and it's the offense that's struggling because of injuries, yeah, but because of some of their own ineptitude, too, to sort of get things on track. So Keith Butler's doing a pretty good job, and, you know, I think they're fairly happy with the way things are going so far on D.
As far as Ben Roethlisberger, was it rust, or has he still got some lingering issues with the injury?
You know, in his post-game press conference, he did not blame the injury at all for his performance. And, you know, knowing Ben, even if his knee was bothering him, he wasn't going to use it as an excuse. If he was out there and the doctors cleared him to play and he felt like he was okay to play today, he wasn't going to lean on that as a reason why he didn't get the job done. So I don't think we'll ever know for sure about that. But, you know, just based on some of his throws today, when some of the Bengals were rushing him and sort of at his feet there, he didn't look completely comfortable. He didn't look like he could move around with the mobility as well as he did previous to the injury. So if I had to speculate, I would say it bothered him a little bit. But, you know, there's still no excuse for him throwing that ball there late in that game where, you know, to set up that winning touchdown by the Bengals. He's got to know better. He's got to be able to throw that ball away and let his team play defense and try to close out to get the victory.
A lot of people saw this Steeler team last year in the playoffs without Le'Veon Bell. What makes this Steeler this offense different this year without him?
Well, it is a completely different situation because they actually had to bring in Ben Tate off the street, and he started the playoff games 4 days after they signed him. He didn't know the offense. He was actually responsible for that play late in that game when Terrell Suggs made that interception. He had a wrong protection. He picked up the wrong guy, and that pass pro broke down, and that's why Suggs made that pick to put that game away. So completely different situation now. Williams has been here since the spring. He knows the offense. I think he'll be a capable replacement. I think the Steelers will have a shot to play well on offense over the final eight games. But, you know, you're sitting here, you're all four of your losses have come in the conference. You're probably going to have to go 10-6 to get into the playoff. That means going 6-2 down the stretch with tough games at Seattle and Cincinnati and at Baltimore, where you never really play well to begin with. I know Baltimore is having a down season, but the Steelers never really play well down there. So if they go 9-7, the tiebreaker is going to be against them. So I think they got to go 6-2 to make it. And I just, at this point, I don't see, I don't think they have it in them, but we'll see how it plays out.
Ray Fittipaldo again, Pittsburgh Post-Gazette on the Steelers, who fall to Cincinnati today, 16-10, as they drop to 4-4 and have lost Le'Veon Bell due to an injury. Appreciate it, Ray. Thank you so much for your time tonight.
All right. Thanks for having me on.
All right. And the Steelers, again, this is back-to-back losses for them, but Ben Roethlisberger is back. This is a tough, tough blow for the Steelers. To have Ben Roethlisberger come back and then to lose Le'Veon Bell right on the same day as you're kind of making this transition. Quarterback's back. Oh, running back's out. And now they're going to go play the Raiders, who are hot. They play Cleveland, at Seattle, Indianapolis, at Cincinnati again, Broncos, Ravens, and Browns to close the season. And like you said, if you're going to go about 10-6, well, they got to go 6-2 down the stretch. And that is going to be very, very difficult to do. Le'Veon Bell, the Steelers didn't get blown out by Baltimore last year, but it was definitely looking different. But I like what he said about how, look, when they lost Le'Veon Bell, they had to bring in Ben Tate. Now with D'Angelo Williams having been there at the start of the season, have been there because they knew he was going to be out at the beginning of the year, that changes how the preparedness of this team plays without him. But there's no mistake. Playing without him is not ideal for the Pittsburgh Steelers down the stretch if they're going to make the playoffs. When you look at this AFC, 10-6 should get you around that mark to get you in as a wild card team. But when you're talking about all the maybe some other teams getting in there around that same mark, you better be winning some conference games. 800-777-2907. On a night where we saw the Denver Broncos beat the Green Bay Packers and the World Series, what a great performance by Matt Harvey that went to waste. 800-777-2907. It's Tony D here on the Nighttime on Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the third shift.
This guy's on. Back to him.
Back to the Quicken Loans studios.
And back to Tony D.
All right, so the Major League Baseball season came to an end as the Royals are now the champs. Are we okay with this? Royals had a great season, right? So we're not... I mean, we're good, right?
Yeah, they're a great team.
I never really get that upset if a team wins the World. Sometimes I go, really? Really? That team? Really? Are going to get the whole offseason being champs? And we're going to have to put up with the Sports Illustrated. Hey, you guys are the champs. Order your commemorative issue now. right? We're going to have to deal with that. Like, yeah. That's the one thing I used to kid my wife about. I'm like, it was not, oh my God, for 17 years that I've been with my wife. Yeah, I mean, all the Florida Gators, you are the champs. Now order this commemorative issue. And I mean, I got so many of that, so much of that. But no, the Royals were a fun team. I liked them. Is there anything not to like about the Royals that I don't know? Am I being naive?
You know, the only thing I would say, and I mean, this is obviously coming from a fan.
A White Sox fan.
Yeah. But, I mean, remember early in the season when they just were getting in fights with everybody?
Yes!
That's...
Which was the pitcher? Was it Ventura?
It was Ventura.
That guy in it was just, just throwing at everybody's head and everything? Yeah, I remember that.
Fighting people and...
I remember that.
But and then remember, so Noah Syndergaard throws up and in. Who's all upset? The Royals.
Right. They were babies.
Yes. So
I thought, what'd you think of Syndergaard making that move? Because I thought it was awesome.
Yeah, I loved it. I mean,
loved it.
Ben Zobrist, they've all been hitting, and they'd love to swing at the first pitch. Why not throw up and in on your first pitch? It's not like he was trying to hit him. If he was trying to hit him, he would have hit him, or it would have been a lot closer. I mean...
It reminds me, with it. His action reminded me of that. You ever seen Casino with Robert De Niro?
Yeah.
Where the kid comes up and he goes, "You're a very lucky man, Mr. Rothstein."
Yep.
And he goes, "Look at this kid. Look at the nerve on this kid." The next day I fired him. Like Noah Syndergaard is like, how much control of your nerves do you have to go out on the mound in game three? The place is electric. It's on fire. The fans are going crazy. And your decision is, the first pitch I'm going to throw is going to just go next to this guy's head. Like, that is complete control of your nerves. Because I would have been such a nervous wreck, I probably would have hit him in the head and get ejected from the game. He threw it right exactly where it was supposed to go.
Yep.
He threw it right where Alcides Escobar would fall down, not get hit, back off, fall down, and not immediately get slammed in the head and Syndergaard get ejected from the game. And he made it look like he was just like, whoops, oh my God, I am so nervous. What am I going to do here? I have no idea. I'm so, like, my hands are sweaty. It's so bad. And then he threw a strike right down the middle of the next pitch.
Yeah, I wanted to scream when I heard all these Royals, like, complaining about.
Oh, God, that was whiny.
Not only because of what happened early in the season with how they acted with everything, but just because you just sounded like a bunch of babies.
And what do the Royals expect? Like, oh, I'm sorry. Do we not give you hittable pitches? Oh, right. I'm sorry. Is that what we were supposed to do? We're supposed to just groove it down the plate for you to swing at and just start scoring runs immediately? I'm sorry. Like, no. You know what? You're swinging at first pitch. Just swing at this. Chin music.
Throwing low and in isn't going to affect anything.
Right. Exactly. Like, oh, well. He wanted to make them uncomfortable. He made them uncomfortable.
Yeah.
That's why game four sucked, because game three was a complete Mets walkthrough, and game four was the game that you're like, okay, Mets get this. This is now game on. I remember thinking to myself, okay, because my father's a Mets fan, and him and my mother are out in Vegas, and so we got to talking the other day, and he was pointing out all these mistakes that the Mets made and whatnot. But during game four, I started thinking, as the Mets were leading game four, I said, wait a minute. If the Mets win this, now I got to look at the series completely differently. I mean, on Thursday night, Friday morning, I went off about how the Mets can't win the series if the Royals are just going to hit everything and put the ball in play and you can't get strikeouts. Well, then, my God, how in the world is the Mets going to get a chance to win this game? Now I would be looking at the series completely different, because if the Mets had held on in game four, what would I really have in the final three games of the series? I would have the Mets getting to reset their excellent rotation, right? So they would basically have Harvey and DeGrom again, guaranteed, with the game four victory. Then I would also get a team in the Mets that should have won game one, didn't win game one, and really should be up 3-1. But instead, because the Royals came back, the Mets were immediately pronounced dead. They're not going to beat this Royals team three straight. They may extend the pain a little bit, but they're only buying time. And that's how quick that series went from, hey, you know what? Maybe the Mets are kind of outplaying the Royals in this series so far, to, yeah, no, the Royals are going to win this thing. It's just a matter of time. Just one couple of, just a couple of mistakes by the New York Mets. Otherwise, I give this series was like a C plus. It had exciting moments, but I mean, it could have been better.
It had nothing like Madison Bumgarner last year.
No, that was missing. It was missing that one huge story. Like, we were just talking about Salvador Perez winning the MVP. It could have been anybody on the Royals. And maybe people like that, but I also like the one guy that's just killing everything. I love the one guy that you just go, that's the reason why they're winning this thing. And I don't know if Salvador Perez was the main reason they won the World Series. He's one of many reasons they won the World Series, and he did have a good series, enough to win MVP, of course. But really, there was a lot of other people you could have given it to. I thought Eric Hosmer was going to win it just because of his batting average with runners on. He did have a crappy batting average when no one was on, but nevertheless, I thought he was fantastic, and he was very instrumental in both games four and game five. All right, 800-777-2907, 800-777-2907. Tomorrow's show, we're going to really get into the college football stuff. The committee is going to be releasing its top four, basically its rankings. I think they do 25 teams. So it's basically going to give you its rankings, and it will have the top four for the playoff. Now, I've heard a number of analysis of this. I've heard a couple of guys like on these football shows, these college football shows over the weekend, especially on after Sunday and after Saturday, that have got, hey, Alabama's in the top. I don't know. I don't know if I'm Alabama crazy right now, but I do know that the team you really got to be looking at, and the team that I think they should be considering for a number one spot, is either Clemson or LSU. Ohio State, of course. But if you're just going to shake up the rankings a little bit, what about LSU? Undefeated so far, Heisman Trophy favorite on the roster. So I'm really curious to see where they go with this. Of course, it's not finalized because, I mean, it's not going to be the etched in stone thing because they go by week. But we're also going to get into the ACC and how, boy, did it screw itself up with that Miami-Duke thing. I know a Twitter went crazy when Miami had eight laterals in their win against the Duke Blue Devils, but now it's kind of been looked at as, yeah, that guy was down and this play shouldn't have stood, and they picked up this penalty and whatnot. Now you're starting to see how the ACC officials really, really cost the conference. Yes, the publicity that you get from that kind of finish that's going to go viral and all that stuff is nothing compared to the potential loss of having Duke not in a very, very nice bowl game. But we'll get to that and all of our college football stuff coming up tomorrow. As far as week 8 in the National Football League, it comes to a conclusion with the Indianapolis Colts and the Carolina Panthers on Monday Night Football. But I'm going to keep saying this. I think there is a new team that we should be looking at closer and closer as a Super Bowl team, at least right now, and that's the Denver Broncos after what they did to Green Bay. I wish this game was good. It wasn't really that good. It was played so well by Denver that the Packers were unlike a team. I've never really seen the Packers under Aaron Rodgers like this. I've never seen Aaron Rodgers this lost offensively, not being able to do some of the things that make him Aaron Rodgers. And that's all the credit in the world to Wade Phillips and that defense. The going quickly through some of the Week 8 notables, Todd Gurley had another fantastic game for the St. Louis Rams. I said this earlier with Frank Schwab. I hope the Rams do not leave because that city should be falling in love with Todd Gurley. 133 yards. He keeps busting out three big runs, big runs time and time again. Drew Brees had 7 touchdowns to Eli Manning's 6 in their game. The Chargers are a mess. They lose again. They're 2-6. Bengals are 7-0, even though it wasn't a great 7-0. And the Titans are the worst team in football, losing to the Texans 20-6. Because right now, they can't do anything right. Tony D, Yahoo Sports Radio.